You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. I'm Art Ray. Today we'll be going to the archives to hear Hugh Lynn Cayce talk about the first 10 minutes after death. Hugh Lynn Cayce was the eldest son of Edgar Cayce and a leading thinker, author, and spokesperson for psychological and paranormal subjects. Before his death, Hugh Lynn served his father's Association for Research and Enlightenment, the ARE, as chairman of the board. He was also author of the book Venture Inward, an examination of safe and unsafe methods of exploring personal psychic experiences, and The Outer Limits of Edgar Cayce's Power, which explores the relatively small number, 200, of Edgar Cayce's psychic readings that appeared to be inaccurate. This interview, recorded in 1976, explores the first 10 minutes after death. The full interview is available in the member-only section of edgarcayce.org.
We have put together some of the talks that Edgar Cayce gave during his lifetime. One of these is called This Business, The First 10 Minutes After Death. You might want to look at it. It contains one story with which I would like to open this morning. I heard my father tell this story many occasions. It apparently impressed him very much. He was on a train going to Hopkinsville, Kentucky, and sat with a young man who had been in a drowning accident here at Virginia Beach. He had been attempting to save his brother, who had drowned. And he went down with his brother and became conscious in the process, as he told Edgar Cayce, of his mother's presence. His mother was dead, and she was urging him that to turn loose of his brother, that he should come back. And he was trying to hold on to his brother in this process, and finally did, at his mother's urging, release his brother, and he came to the surface. They revived him, though he had no memory of the revival. He was out when they pulled him in and finally brought him back to consciousness. Apparently, this boy was so vivid, so certain about this experience with his mother as he was dying, that it impressed Edgar Cayce very much. And he told that story, and it was a takeoff for him, I think, a reassurance that the hundreds of almost daily experiences that he apparently had during his lifetime, that he was experiencing, other people were experiencing the same thing that he was experiencing now and then. This sense of the in-between, particularly at the point of death, being very thin, and communication being very possible. You've been hearing about all kinds of states of consciousness where communication and realization of another kind of experience becomes very apparent, whether it be the drugs or the many altered states of consciousness, or whether it happens to be the death experience, the beginning, the transition. And so this morning, we want to talk about using this subject, the first 10 minutes after death, dead subject, in this area. Let me add a personal experience of my own that is familiar to many of you. It had the same kind of impression on me at a very reasonably early age that Dad's experience with this boy had. I was a freshman in Washington Lee, and I was rooming with Tom Shagrew, or trying to. We didn't make it through that year, but we did the final senior year, but we were fussing and fighting and arguing, and we had a friend, a sophomore, who was very knowledgeable. All sophomores are knowledgeable in college. And he was doing his best to straighten out two very confused freshmen. He was clearing up Tom Shugrue's misconceptions about the Catholic Church, and he was straightening me out about psychical research. Gus Elias, a very intelligent, very knowledgeable young man, got into a massive argument with us one morning, going on the way to the post office, and we sat down on the post office steps and solved all of the world's problems in a very short time. And this included his straightening me out that I was nuts for even believing in anything psychic or survival. Dead, you're dead. And he was straightening Tom out on Catholicism. We left and went back, and finally, that night, studied, and Gus went to a dance at Natural Bridge. He had done his day's work, and sometime in the middle of the night, I woke up. And I was sitting up in the bed, but my body was lying down. And I became aware that there was a part of me that could move away from that body by simply choosing to do so. And I moved, and I discovered that it was possible to enter the body again in a variety of different ways. I had been told that you had to go in through a hole in the body. That is not true. I can testify that you can come in a lot of different ways. You can come in from the top and make a three-point landing that way. You can slide in, or you can even, and I tried this, it can be done, you can come up through the mattress and re-enter the body. I've often said that is one of the feats that I shall never forget, because coming through a W&L mattress in those days was something, anywhere you did it. Suddenly, as I was going in and out and experiencing this business, I became aware of the ability to move and look back at the body, which was snoring away in its usual position, flat of its back, and I could move up on the molding, I could do all kind of things, and the room suddenly began to fill up with a cloud. Now, it's absolutely dark, but to me I could see easily the whole room. Consciousness was outside of that flesh body. And the cloud came down into the room, and I moved to the center of the room and was on the floor in consciousness. My body was still, I looked at it, was still over there asleep. And out of the cloud came a hand and a voice. And it was Gus Elias's voice. And it was Gus's hand. And he said, "Casey, come up here, come up here. This is terrific. I got to show you. Come up here." And I tried to move off of the floor, and as I touched the cloud, I became frightened, fearful, and I found myself back in my body. And I sat up, all of me now, consciousness and the flesh body. And I began to try to figure out in my head what crazy thing could have happened, what a wild dream. A cloud and Gus Elias and his voice in my room. And suddenly, there was a pounding on the door, and the boy's voice yelling, "Casey, get up. Get up and get over to the hospital. They're bringing Gus Elias, his body, in. He was killed at 12 o'clock. And I turned on the light, and it was about 2 o'clock. And I went and saw Gus's body. He just cracked his head a little bit, being thrown out, and you know the dates, of a rumble seat in an automobile, coming back from Natural Bridge. It was very dangerous in those days, driving around W&L. Almost every room on campus contained small kegs of white substance called corn liquor, and it was prohibition days, and people were being blinded easily, and they died 9 that year on the roads around. Strange business. Now, that experience with a man who didn't believe and whom I had been with just a little bit before. Not 10 minutes, but couldn't have been more than an hour or so after his death. A strange business of communication. What's this death like? Educasi met him one day and talked with him. And we put this together in this booklet from which I will read once in a while some extracts. Educasi was giving a reading, preparing to give a reading. He had lost consciousness.
We'll be right back with more with Hugh Lynn Casey on Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Casey. You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Casey. We're back with Hugh Lynn Casey.
Educasi was giving a reading, preparing to give a reading. He had lost consciousness. And he went out, he said. He frequently saw himself traveling, as you remember, on a shaft of light, a little wiggle tail. I went out and I realized that I had contacted death as a personality, as an individual, or as a being. Realizing this, I remarked to death, "You're not as ordinarily pictured with a black mask or hood or a skeleton or like Father Time or the sickle. Instead, you're fair and rosy-cheeked and robust. You have a pair of scissors." In fact, I had to look twice at the feet or limbs or even at the body to see it take shape. He replied, "Yes, death is not what many seem to think. It's not a horrible thing, which is often picked as it is often pictured. Just a change. Just a visit. The scissors are indeed the implements most representative of life and death to man. These indeed unite by dividing and divide by uniting. The cord does not, as usually thought, extend from the center, but is broken from the head, the forehead, that soft portion we see pulsing in an infant. Hence we see old people, unbeknowing to themselves, gain strength from youth by kissing there, and the youth gains wisdom by such kisses. Indeed, the vibrations may be raised to such an extent as to rekindle or reconnect the cord, even as the master did with the Widow of Nain, for he did not take him by the hand, which was bound to the body, as was the custom of the day, but rather stroked him on the head, and the body took life of itself, of life itself. So you see, the silver cord may be broken, but the vibration, and here my experience ended," he said. Now, let's look a little more closely at these Educasi readings, because that's why I am, as you well know, attempting to put together experiences, personal and an understanding of the material, but to compare and to work with it in parallel with the material from other sources, many sources, and share this as tools, as insight, as understanding that individuals can use in that particular way. It's been our experience that this is happening. Hundreds of thousands, perhaps millions of people. And so we try to do it with as much decency and order as possible. And you've seen a magnificent example of it this weekend, in my opinion. Here's a definition. Death, from the readings, from Educasi's reading, death in the material plane is passing through the outer door into a consciousness in material activities that partake of what the entity or soul has done with its spiritual truth in its manifestations in other spheres. Now listen again. Death in the material plane is passing through the outer door into a consciousness in the material activities that partakes of what the entity or soul has done with its spiritual truth in its manifestation in other place, other spheres. And then we go on. A death in the flesh is a birth into the realm of another experience to those who have lived in such a manner as not to be bound by earthly ties. You heard Dr. Ross last night saying almost in passing, and I'm sure this has been a part of her experience of having to turn loose a lot of physical things, position, money, and jobs, and all kind of things, turning loose so as not to be bound. Apparently, many of us cling to the physical so tightly that, as we'll see, it carries over a bit. Someone asked Edgar Cayce, is the entity free of the physical body? Free, he said, of the material body, but not free of matter. Only changed in the form as to matter, and is just as acute to the realms of consciousness as in the physical, or more so, or carnal body, or more so. The feelings, the emotions, the ties. Matter has changed, has speeded up, but you haven't lost contact with the earth in the beginning. Now, many people speak of this as the astral, and it depends on which books you've read, as I often say, as to how confused you are about this, because there are many conflicting terms for these dimensions of consciousness. And one really needs to experience rather than just read books about it and try to define it. You have to experience, move, travel a bit. And I think what we had with education was a traveler who could describe frequently in some detail what he was experiencing and passing through. You might think of this as the, in a physical sense, of the disappearance of a propeller on an airplane. When it simply speeds up to a certain point, it disappears. Now, you know perfectly well it hasn't gone anywhere, and if you stick your finger in there, you know even better that it hasn't gone anywhere. But to you, it seems that it has disappeared. It's moved. If somebody could, there's something going on with this mic. If you cut it just or change it just a little bit, got a kickback in here. Or if you wanted to think of it in another way, the steam, old famous water and steam business. When the water boils on your stove, it has changed, but it's still there. It's changed its form. Now, in a sense, when we move and turn loose of, we've turned loose of the flesh, but not matter. We have a finer body, a real physical body. And that's the one we are talking about that experiences in the beginning. Now, its transition is greatly dependent, it would seem, and we'll gather this from several different sources, greatly dependent on the development, so to speak, of the individual. Now, development, the understanding, the work that the individual has done in balancing his life, releasing, turning loose. Death, Educacy said in another reading, in that moment, as in birth, we have the beginning of an earthly sojourn, so little or long as time may be. So birth into the spiritual plane begins with death in the earth plane. Merely the separation of the spiritual and soul forces from the earthly connection. And he goes on in another reading, for life and death are one, and only those who will consider the experience as one may come to understand or indeed comprehend what peace really means. Now, you heard a lot of this last night with Dr. Ross, as she talked about the peace that, you know, you don't have to even think about or talk about people who understand dying, a bit of it, but how many don't, and what fear, and what strange business. This fear of death, this fear of destruction, this tremendous fear that haunts man about his transition, where he's going, what's next. For life and death are one, and only those who will consider the experience as one may come to understand or indeed comprehend what peace really means. So this is something worth working for, worth working with your concepts and your ideas and your experiences, if you will. Because we need a little peace inside and outside and all around us, as you well know. He goes on, and here's an illustration, a simile again to work with. Very common denominator for us all is sleep. Sleep is a shadow of that intermission in Earth's experience of that state called death. Sleep. A third of our lives we spend asleep, the physical life, in an altered state of consciousness. And here we have with us constantly a simile, a way of understanding this transition called death, this experience. Sleep is like it. Now, let's look for a moment at the experiences of transition. What takes place immediately as we die? We need first to look at some of the readings and then some experiences. What one thinks, and this is a famous quote from the education readings that many of you have seen many times. You may hear it again now and then. What one thinks continually, they become. What one cherishes in their heart and mind, they make a part of the pulsation of their heart through their own blood cells and build in their own physical that which its spirit and soul must feed upon and that with which it will be possessed when it passes into the realm for which the other experiences of what it has gained here in the physical plane must be used. Again, in the parallel. The mind is the builder.
We'll be right back with more. You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. We're back with Hugh Lynn Cayce.
The mind is the builder. And you're going to move into exactly the place, the condition at death that you build now. Not then, but now. Now there will be transition and moving on. I suspect that tomorrow, or maybe Monday or Tuesday, Rainer will straighten us out entirely on the subject of time. It is the most confusing of all our boundaries of perception, and it's one that begins to break down in the psychic experience, and that is why the psychic is so frightening at times and so confusing. What we thought was a stable past, present, and future ceases to be. And we suddenly realize it does not exist at all. That it's all in our head. And that there is only one time. And we experience, we make up the past, present, and future for convenience, for protection. And only when we begin to break those barriers and use time and space, these two barriers of our that we create in the mind, can we begin to really appreciate what's going on. For it's all one. We're in the middle of life and death now. We don't die, as you know. We are dying. Every moment, every day. The change is constant. But we are not aware because of these peculiar our peculiar perception of time-space. Now, we build then the pattern that we're going to move into, and it's a mental pattern, a mental state. He goes on, when the physical body, the body physical, lays aside the material body. Now, he distinguishes between, I think, this real physical body and the flesh body. When the body physical lays aside the material body or the flesh, that in the physical called soul becomes the body of the entity. And that called the superconscious, the consciousness of the entity, as the subconscious is to the physical body. The subconscious becomes the mind or intellect of the body. In other words, we lose the physical consciousness. What we know as the subconscious or unconscious becomes the active mind at this point. And we have some beautiful illustrations of how this works on these other planes of consciousness. For example, in our fairy stories. We can't pause that too long, or I'll go right off down the road. As the soul and spirit takes its form in the spiritual plane, as the physical body takes its form in the material plane when we are born in it, it is subject to the spiritual plane, to those immutable laws of the spiritual plane. The spiritual entity of the individual is composed then of the spirit, the superconscious, the soul, the subconscious body, as the body is prepared for the entity in the spiritual plane, taking then the position in the universal force or space that the entity has prepared for itself, and goes through its development in that plane until ready again to manifest in the flesh plane. And so that degree of development toward that perfection that would make the entity in its entirely perfect or one with the Creator. Now, let me give you a couple of illustrations here of how this kind of business worked. And we were constantly looking, as we watched Edgar Cayce every day, it was like the microscope that opens up a drop of clear water and suddenly it becomes alive when you look through the eyes of a psychic. Or like looking at a blank place in the sky with a telescope and the whole thing becomes alive with stars. So experiencing every day, living with this man, you never know what was going to happen next. What he was going to say, or what was going to take place right around you in the middle of the house. And so one morning he woke up with this very interesting, he was all excited to tell it and talk about it, and it was a strange story. He had been asleep the night before, he said, and there'd been a tapping on the window, and he became aware of someone out there talking to him, and he recognized who it was. It was a girl that had worked for him in this studio in Selma, Alabama many years before, and he knew that she was dead. But she was a very proper young lady, and so she was asking him to please come down and let her in the front door. She wanted to see him, but she wanted to come in, you know, in the proper manner. And he went down and he opened the door and she was standing there. He got up and went down and left my mother asleep in the bed, and we were in the house, and opened the door and invited her in, and he could see through her. But she came in, she was solid enough to come in and sit down and talk to him. And she wanted to know what to do. She said, I know I'm dead, and I've been living with my mother and father, and they keep running off and leaving me, and I don't know where to go, and I don't know what to do. And I was around the studio, and I remembered, if I could just get to you, you could tell me what to do. And she said, I've had an awful time. She said, you know, I died of that illness, that I had a stomach trouble, and the doctor operated on me, and I died from his operation. And when I got over on when I first got over on the other side, I was still sick. I was still suffering, and I was very concerned, and the doctor died, and he finished the operation on the other side and said, I'm all right now. Now, years had been going on, and she thought it was like this, like 10 minutes. And she said, I need to know what to do now. And Dad said that he told her about the light and how to look for it and how to pray about it, and that he would pray for her and have a group pray for her, and that she should follow this light when she saw it, and she'd know where to go. You hear us babbling here every once in a while about a light that comes in meditation. If I may be slightly profaned, we had damn well find it before we move over to the other side. We may need it. Where to go? A lost feeling on the other side that is timeless can be very disturbing. So we need to be able to move. Well, you remember, I had this strange experience with Gus Elias. And he, because I was in an altered state of consciousness, he was able to touch me, apparently, and make contact. Unless we change our state of consciousness, it's difficult for communication to take place. On several occasions, after Edgar Cayce finished readings, he would begin to talk again, as if he was sliding back on that light and would stop and talk to someone who was on another level of consciousness. It didn't happen often, but when it did happen, it was a very strange thing, because you could only hear one side of the telephone conversation. You could hear him talking to people that you couldn't see. They weren't there. And they were talking and about things that were going on around them. And you have him one day stopping, and it was as if he were talking to my mother's brother, my uncle, who was dead. And we began to realize that this uncle, who had passed on years before with tuberculosis down in Texas, the tuberculosis that my mother suffered from, the whole family was involved, and Dad saved her, but the readings were not given on the brother. He died, and he had been on captain of a baseball team. And lo and behold, the first thing he begins to talk about to my father in this altered state and transmitted in the conversation that we could hear, Dad talking to him, was that he had gone to a house that the grandfather was building when he died, when the grandfather died. And this home place had become the center through which this large family was flowing, a point of contact, a return point. And he was explaining that he had gone back to this house, that the house had been finished, and that he had seen all these people, the family there, and that they had all were going off from this house on different paths. And he knew that they were dead, and he explained he had been able to do some of the things that he had hoped he could do about the baseball team. They were winning games now. Didn't win many when he... Strange, the patterns of the mind being built, the house being built, a symbol that they return to, whole large family, a transition point, a moving point. And he went into some explanation of this. One day, when Edgar Cayce was giving a reading in Virginia Beach here, at the end of the reading, he'd been given the suggestion to wake up, and he made the simple statement, if you want to see your mother alive, that Edgar Cayce should go at once to see his mother.
We'll be right back with more with Hugh Lynn Cayce on Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. We're back with Hugh Lynn Cayce.
And he made the simple statement, if you want to see your mother alive, that Edgar Cayce should go at once to see his mother. Now, there'd been no report of her being ill, and when we waked up, my mother was crying, and because the statement had been made, she was about to die. And Edgar Cayce bought a ticket and got on a train and went to Hopkinsville, Kentucky, and his mother met him at the front door. Apparently nothing wrong with her. And here he was showing up for her death and didn't even tell her about it. And the next day she went to bed. And he sat with her for 2 days. She wasn't suffering very much, just felt weak. But he sat there and watched her move out of her body, so he described it, and talk with her mother and father, talk with her sister who had passed on, and then re-enter her body and talk with him. And it was only after the conversation with her mother and father, his grandparents, you see, that she told him, "Edgar, I'm going to die. I'm so glad you're here to be with me. I have just talked to so-and-so," describing her grandparents, "and I'm going with them. The next time they come, I'm going to be ready." And then she proceeded to tell him what to do about his sisters, and as a mother would, to take care of this and to take care of that and take care of the other. And she was arranging for the transition. She said, "When they come back tomorrow, I'm going with them." And she did, very quietly and very beautifully. And Edgar Casey watched this. There's not everyone that can see this, but we heard last night somebody who is getting very close to this business of seeing, of feeling it, of beginning to know what's taking place here. And that's what is motivating and moving this little lady that spoke to us last night. She is beginning to see and know not just this plane, but the other plane. Now, the companionship of loved ones, said Edgar Casey, seeks the companionship in that plane. For as the tree falls, so shall it lie. She is well and happy talking about the person, the mother, seen with other family members in a dream. This was by somebody else's dream. And then someone asked him, what is meant by paradise as Jesus referred to? He has an interesting statement on this. The inner between, the awareness of being in that state of transition between the material and the physical, between the material and the spiritual, I'm sorry, phases of consciousness of the soul. Let me do that again. The in-between, the awareness of being in that state of transition between material and the spiritual phases of consciousness of the soul. It's a transition. This paradise that Jesus was using the word poison. The awareness of these is the companionship of entities or souls or separate forces in those stages of development. It is time and space, as I've said, that can be the most confusing for us. Let me look with you then at another area on this transition from the readings. As to how long death may take, many individuals have remained in that called death for what ye called years, without realizing he was dead. Now, this is a rather disturbing idea. And in the beginning, you may negate this. You may insist that, you know, God couldn't have let that kind of thing happen. We can't be that lonely. We can't be that closed off. But we only have to turn around and look at ourselves in the present.
And now it's time for the thought for the day. And today's thought for the day will be read by Kimberly Rose. Kimberly Rose is the host of the radio show Interviews with Kimberly Rose on CBS Sky Radio on Thursdays from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern. She'll also be speaking at the upcoming conference, Be Your Own Psychic. It's the Edgar Casey Legacy, from October 19th to the 23rd at the ARE in Virginia Beach. To find out more, go to edgarcasey.org, click on events, and then click on conferences. Well, hello.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, fine. And what is today's thought for the day?
I love this one. It's 2936-2. All that ye may know of good must first be within self. All you may know of God must be manifested through thyself. To hear of him is not to know. To apply and live and be is to know. That's interesting because, you know, the work that I know that I've been doing in my life, it's called Crystalline Consciousness Technique, and it's really about getting in touch with that part of yourself, like God within, And I find that the more I get to know and the more I honor that part of myself, I mean, I find that my life feels more peaceful and I have more of a clear communication with God. And in the Bible, it says in the book of Genesis, and God breathed his breath into man and man became a living soul. Well, here's a perfect example of that. Of God, you know, the good and God being within themselves.
Wow. Oh, yes. And it also mentions in the Bible that not just to read God's word, but to understand it and then to apply it.
Yes.
So you don't just hear it. You hear it or read it and then you understand it and then you apply it.
Yep.
Or else, you know, what good does it do you if you're not applying it?
I agree 100%. It's, oh, yes. And why not apply it if you can make your life happier,
mm-hmm.
and more balanced?
Yes. And also, of course, that might apply, you know, the good must first be within self, you know, pulling the beam out of your own eye before you pull the splinter out of someone else's eye. You have to look to yourself first and see if you need to do something that can make yourself better before you start dealing with that same issue in others or trying Absolutely. To preach to others about that.
Absolutely. Just to be a mirror.
Oh, yes. Well, thanks for doing the thought for the day today.
Thank you. You have a blessed day.
That's all the time we have for the show today. Thanks for listening to Hugh Lynn Casey talk about the first 10 minutes after death. To hear more, go to edgarcasey.org and check out the member-only section. Thanks to Kimberly Rose for the thought for the day, and most of all to you, the listeners. Thanks for listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Casey.